Greetings, welcome, and Happy New Year. This is another episode of the Wandering One podcast brought to you by Wandering One Studios and your host, yours truly, Link Flores. Yeah, Happy New Year to everyone. If you hear this, you made it. Congratulations, you survived to 2025. I know it's been a very crazy past year, and I know that, you know, everybody's got their own feelings about how 2024 went and what the future is looking like going forward. But that said, I'm glad that you guys took some time out of your day to join me, and I appreciate all the support. We get the business stuff out of the way, and then we'll get to this podcast, which is well overdue and going to be kind of a chock full one. So hold on to your hats. We're going to hit this at light speed, essentially, for me. Let's go to, first off, twitch.tv/linkib. That's LINKIBE. I'm going to still be doing game streaming. We're going to try to rededicate our efforts to finishing Baldur's Gate 3 and Final Fantasy 6 through this year. I believe I can do it. I have faith in me, and I hope you do too. But I'm also going to be doing some more art content over there. So please stop by and check out the schedule. The updated schedule should be showing up before the end of this week, which is the first week of January 2025. Yeah, and it's a beautiful, kind of breezy and chill Wednesday on the November, January 1st, 2025. So come and check me out over there. I'll see about updating all this stuff for the stream as soon as possible. And then a reminder, we just had the subscriber giveaway for the holidays. Thank you all very much for your support. And congratulations to the subscribers over there on Twitch. Go and check out that last video on demand if you're curious to see about who it was that won. And a reminder that usually during the beginning of the year for any new year, I take a little break from streaming. Gives me a chance to refresh some of the assets that I use. Maybe work out some new ideas for how the schedule's going to work, or maybe just to take a break and just play games just for the heck of it and focus on some other outside projects. So I would check out the stream if you're able to. It's going to go live a little later than usual, probably around 4:30 Eastern Standard Time today, if you're able to hear this before then. And then going forward, I might be making some adjustments to my overall schedule. So keep your eyes out for that over on twitch.tv/linkib. If you've got comments, questions, maybe you're looking for a different outside opinion on a situation you've got going on, or maybe a burning question in the back of your brain, go on over to patreon.com/wanderingonestudios, where you can also check out some bonus content from the podcast, stuff that maybe doesn't make the core podcast, but still seems like something we should maybe poke around and pick at. And as a bonus, like I said, I'm going to be reading some of the letters that you send in to Patreon over the emails that you send to Patreon. I'll be picking a couple out to read on the core podcast going forward into 2025. Kind of a way to incentivize you guys to write in and hear a little bit of your voice back in this podcast, so it's not just a one-way conversation, and to encourage more participation over on the Patreon, which is where I want to shape more episodes that are driven purely by your content and questions and commentary. Because I think that that's important for engagement, and also it's kind of fun to hear other people's ideas and what I represented, and we could pick them apart over there. So please feel free to write in patreon.com/wanderingonestudios, where it's free to join, and it's only $3 a month to support the podcast. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Let's get into it. We really hit the ground running this year. I mean, well, yeah, for the beginning of the year. Goodness, what was happening? Some of you probably were watching the stream. I was having some stomach trouble over the last couple of days. And you guys know my dietary issues and whatnot. So like, it's probably no surprise to anybody that I was trying everything I could to try to regulate my diet a little bit more. And in so doing, I just decided to hit on something a little bit softer, a little bit easier on the stomach. And I think it may have been like something like just a regular stomach flu, but it sucked because I didn't get the vomit, which, I mean, it's great, but you know, everything coming out the back end was not feeling so hot. And so for like about the last 3 or 4 days, it's just been, It's been terrible. We're not going to get into the gory details of it, but just suffice it to say, I was doing a lot of sitting on soft, cushiony stuff that wasn't just a couch, couch cushion for a couple days there. And I'm starting to feel better, but then I was just thinking about it the other day, you know, when I was in my struggles over the weekend, and I remembered hearing this report saying that there's incidence of a strain of norovirus, which is the virus that causes the, you know, the generalized stomach flu. A new strain of norovirus was apparently making the rounds, and obviously there's no cure or vaccine for the norovirus. It just kind of comes about when food is contaminated by, you know, either inadequate preparation or inadequate storage, shipping, or handling. And then the food becomes contaminated with, you know, biological waste, for lack of a, well, for not wanting to say the other words, because I'm still a little grumbly in the tumbly. And then you end up bringing it home. You think you've done a good job cleaning it, preparing it, whatever, and it just, you get the sickies. And yeah, that's what happened. So I was worried that maybe I'd caught this new strain of norovirus that's going around. And it could be, because I've never really had, outside of when I was just first realizing that I had, you know, gluten and lactose issues, I hadn't really had that kind of stomach problem in a long time. And so I was really concerned, like, if this gets worse, I'm definitely gonna have to go to the hospital, because the best way they can fix this essentially is to keep you hydrated. Now, you can drink water and all the other stuff and whatnot, but the best way they could treat this is to basically keep you hydrated and let it pass. It has to run its course. The vomiting, the diarrhea, the whatever, all has to kind of run its course, because there's no, like, hey, take this shot, you'll be better in the morning. So yeah, thankfully that turned a corner last night into this morning, and I feel so much better. I actually was able to sleep a little bit more, which helps a lot, being able to sleep and, you know, not be interrupted by anything. Especially the scariest thing to be interrupted by is your stomach having a revolution while you're trying to take, you know, catch your regular straight eight. And so I was feeling much better after some food, a lot of water, some apple juice, a little bit of sauerkraut, a couple of pickle spears and whatnot, just to add some extra probiotics to the tummy. And I'm feeling much better. So that's good news. But again, like I said, just because, you know, this is still going around, I'm sure it's going to happen somewhere else. And a lot of grocery store chains are falling susceptible to this. It's not really, from what I understand, it's not really coming so much from, like, local farmers markets. It's more like these mass chains who are mishandling the food and stuff like that we're getting. And it's kind of a nightmare. So be careful, mind your food, you know, check what you're doing, wash it extra good, you know what I mean? And be safe out there. Because there's one thing that actually has been happening, and I noticed this a lot from our local big grocery chain here. For those of you who are familiar with the Southeast region, there's a chain called Publix, where shopping is a pleasure. And of late, it hasn't really been so much when it comes to the food, especially the meat I've been getting out of there. And, you know, I know that things are kind of crazy with, like, you know, global warming actually being a real thing. And the very real concerns about, you know, supply chain issues, because, you know, there's not enough workers to transport the food and fruit and vegetables and the meats and whatnot to and from places. You have higher than usual temperatures that can affect, like, you know, where storage facilities are held, and, you know, just X, Y, and Z kind of mitigating factors that can play a role. But of late, I would go to Publix and, you know, I was getting some meat that I'd bring home, and it'd be spurious, to say the least. It actually happened just a couple days ago. I went and picked up some groceries, and I grabbed a package of just chicken thighs, you know, something simple you can pop open, throw into a casserole dish, sprinkle a little, you know, seasonings, whatever on them, and wrap, you know, cover it with foil. Boom, done. And I opened this pack, and this smell that came out of it when I opened it was just, I was already feeling kind of nauseated anyway. It was not even nauseated, just like stomach was all rumbly. That really kind of sent me over the edge almost. So I was just like, oh, we're going to throw up right away. And I don't usually get nauseated like that by food or by smells or anything really, but that was starting to send me over the edge. And I picked through the package, you know, like, is it this? Is it that? You know, is it just like my imagining this? Because you know, I'm kind of hypersensitive at this moment because I'm worried about what's going to make me feel sick again. And I know there's like these weird dark spots on the meat. There's certain parts of like, there were sometimes I would buy chicken breast and I'd open the package of chicken breast. And, you know, chicken normally has like kind of a very pinkish color. This shit was gray. And it looked like somebody just took gray and white yarn and threaded it into the chicken meat. And I'm like, oh no, we can't have this. We feed this to somebody, they're definitely getting botulism like that day. And so I ended up having to take several packages of chicken in particular back to the grocery store. And let me be honest with you, not happy about that. Particularly because it takes about 15 minutes just to get to the grocery store, the closest one. Well, the second closest one. But even getting out of our neighborhood, since they haven't bothered to fix the freaking road yet, the traffic coming out of our neighborhood, depending on what time of day you come out, you could be waiting up to, you know, 10, 15 minutes just to get to the main access road. And that also, you know, impacts the time that I have to do anything else. So the day I had to go return it, I was actually supposed to be streaming that day, which was Monday, for the subscriber giveaway, and it being like almost an hour or so late because I had to come in. You know, I was going to put the chicken away. Maybe I'd be like 15 minutes late. Then I opened it up and found that it was all just stank. And so I had to pack it back up, get in the car, drive back out there. And then I had to drive back and wait in that weird little bottleneck where they haven't finished the damn road yet. And that gets frustrating. But at least we didn't eat no stank meat, which is good. But I've noticed that a lot, you know, a lot of places lately that their meat and their vegetables, like, and even like it's stuff that you wouldn't think would just spoil like that, like would turn so fast. I'm noticing that some of this stuff is just like, it's rotting. One of them actually, I think it was a couple of tomatoes I got. They rotted within 2 days of being in the refrigerator. And I'm like, it's not like I stored these things, you know, in a pantry, you know, or like, you know, next to a slop sink in the garage. They were in a refrigerated place and they just molded like almost immediately. I'm like, this is insane. And like I said, the chicken, I've had that happen like 3 or 4 times over, especially the last like 6 months. And I'm like, you know, I don't know where to go from now. You know what I mean? I got to find either a butcher or I got to find like a local, you know, like a local poultry farmer or something like that to get my chicken and my meats and stuff from. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing because I'd be supporting a local business. You know what I mean? It'd be way more, I think, way better of an investment in the community to be able to do that. But then it's like finding someone and then being able to get to them, because a lot of these farms are a little further out and off the beaten track. So now I got to make sure I have like a cooler to take with me. I can't just put them in my air conditioned car because they're in an air conditioned spot. I got to make sure I get this stuff into a cooler, ready to go, bring it back home so it doesn't have a chance to thaw out or go bad or anything. Like, not even go bad, but just thaw out and get kind of warm. If it gets to like room temperature, that's gross. So yeah, weird stuff, man. Weird stuff to have to think about. And it's a very first world problem to have. I'm very much aware of that. So before anybody hits me with that, like, I know exactly how that sounds. I know that it's like, yep, look at you. Oh, with your fancy refrigeration and everything. I get it. I get exactly how it sounds. But yeah, it is a scary thing to have to think about. It's a scary thing to think about. I mean, that's going to be one of my like New Year's resolutions, I guess, which I mean, 6 to 1, half dozen the other. Half time you end up screwing up a resolution before you get through the first couple of months of the new year, right? But I think it might be a good idea to at least like focus on throughout the year, trying to find like some greengrocers or butchers or, you know, farmers that have fresher and more sustainably sourced, vegetables, fruits, even like breads or and meats and stuff like that, you know, just look for my groceries in a more responsible manner. How about that? Instead of relying on big corporate chains to do the right thing, I could be looking to the people in my community and in my neighborhood to help out and then put some money back into their pockets and stimulate the economy locally rather than throwing all my money at big corporations. I'm not going to sit here and say that like corporations have never done anything good for America or for our economy, but they're really not the greatest. And we all know that. So if I can kind of cut the cord a little bit on that end, that might be a good thing. What plans do you guys have for the year of 2025? And I want to encourage you guys to take some time out to think about that kind of thing. Feel free to write in, obviously, to the podcast and let me know. One of the things I really want to do is to focus more on doing more artwork and learning one language and getting way better at speaking another. For a long time, I wanted to learn how to speak a different language. I speak a little bit of Spanish, but it's nowhere near fluent, and it's nowhere near as expansive of a vocabulary as I'd like. So I want to focus more on learning Spanish to better competency and fluency, and then also learning Korean, because I watch a lot of Korean dramas, and I used to hang out with a lot of people, Korean people, when I was in high school, especially my later years in high school. And I think it'd just be cool to learn a different language. Plus, it adds like a little bit of versatility to like your job offerings. You know, if you're able to say like, "Hey, I speak Spanish and Korean and English," they're like, "What?" I'm like, "Yeah, I speak three languages." That would be dope just to have on your resume, period. But especially when I'm thinking about trying to get into voice acting and whatnot, being able to speak multiple different languages is a huge benefit. So I think I'm going to be focusing more on my Spanish and my Korean going into 2025. Although I have considered trying to take Japanese courses. I think if I was going to do Japanese, I couldn't just pull it off Rosetta Stone. I'd need like a more structured environment. Like I'd have to end up, you know, filling out some FAFSA stuff and taking some college level credit courses so that I can learn how to speak Japanese on that level. And who knows, if I find a good enough deal on like, you know, online courses or, you know, whatever, then maybe I'll do all three of those languages and just roll it into like one big language learning university for this year. That might be a good idea. And, you know, given the fact that I'm working in kind of communications, sort of, it could end up being like a business asset. Who knows? I may be able to speak with other people. Obviously, be able to speak with other people from other cultures and whatnot would be awesome. But being able to broker some work in the voice acting community, like, hey, you know, there's gamers, there's game companies out there, there's animation companies, there's film companies out there who could be looking for someone who can translate and or just speak another language, and just looking for a little bit of variety in their voice profiles, and maybe I could be that guy. So that's one of my goals, is to try to at least get to like the point where I could CLEP test out for like Spanish at the very least, and hopefully Korean as well. And who knows, maybe I'll give a swing at Japanese, just go for a three-piece throughout the year. Sounds like a lot, but I mean, you know, given that this is what I do, I have plenty of time and opportunity, but I also want to focus more on going back into doing more artwork so I can craft cool shit for you guys as well. Like again, namely get some stickers, some posters, some more merch out there. Redesign some of the old merch that's kind of basic, if I'm being quite honest with you. I'm not displeased with it necessarily, but I know that it's very minimalist, and that doesn't really encourage people to spend money on merch, especially if you're like, hey, I'm going to blow $20 on a t-shirt. I'd like a little bit more than one single little logo design on it, please. Granted, they'll definitely buy that kind of thing if it's got Pepsi or Bud Light or whatever fuck on it. But for me, you know, I gotta be above and beyond. You know, I gotta go a step above. So I'm definitely going to be looking into doing that. But yeah, let me know what your New Year's plans are. Like I said, mine is to at least pick up one language and get to some semblance of proficiency, particularly in Spanish. And then focus on Korean or Japanese. And, you know, artwork, getting more artwork done, doing more artwork, pushing for another voice acting job. The last one I did, I still haven't gotten paid for. So I don't know what's going on with them. I know we discussed it, though, they were going to pay me for it, but I have yet to see a nickel from that. So I'd be very loath to do anything like that in the future without a contract, which I should have known. I should have been like, you know what? I'm down to do this for you, but you got to pay me at least this much and we have to get it in writing. And I never did that. So I just kind of got screwed on that. It's cool to have it on your resume, like, but it's a thing that goes to somebody else and they're like, yeah, I did it, but you know, there's nothing to prove it. You know, no money exchange hands, no contracts, nothing like that. So I won't be doing that again in the near future if I can help it. Anyway, good times there. Bad times, because we already know, like, this is the last week, this past week of December, we lost a couple of pretty important celebrities, or at least, like, celebrities that you may know about. One of them was Olivia Hussey, who passed away at the age of 73 this week. Was actually one of the leading roles in Romeo and Juliet, 1968 film release. If you go back and Google her image, I'll never forget when I first saw Romeo and Juliet, the film itself. I was still in high school and I'd never seen it before. And I just remember seeing her and like she was just striking. There's something just stunning about her appearance. And I had like a little film crush on her, even though like that film came out in 78. And I think when the time I would have watched it, she would have been like 50 something years old at that point, close to that. But yeah, that was a, well, she probably would have been, that was probably been like, you know, their early 40s. But yeah, I was just like, just blown away by her. So sad that she's passed on. Greg Gumbel, who you might remember, some of you may remember, a sportscaster and newscaster for a very long time, also passed away at the age of 78. And former President Jimmy Carter, at the age of 100, has shuffled off this mortal coil. And anytime a president dies, it's kind of like a mixed bag of emotions. Because some people feel a certain way about him. Some people feel another way about him. They're like, but his foreign policy when he was in office. I'm like, yeah, but then he grew older and did some other shit. So, like, there's a thing we're going to get into a little bit later about where people finally get to get off the hook for some shit. And, like, how long does somebody have to keep paying their dues in order to be forgiven? And I think, you know, if you're a president, you're never going to walk away from that job completely clean. Somebody somewhere down the line is going to hate your fucking guts. But I think Jimmy Carter, especially in like his later years with his work with Habitat for Humanity, was doing some really impactful and meaningful work to give back, not just as a president, you know, telling people what to do, but just like showing love through service, which I think is pretty cool. Definitely an example in that regard. And he also he inadvertently has created a very interesting set of circumstances that will affect at least one person in the very, very near future. Now, to the best of my recollection, and I could be wrong, but since I've been alive, I can only recall two former U.S. presidents passing away, maybe three. And I was also very young, or at least young enough that I wasn't really as, I wasn't as cognizant of the political workings of our society. I was aware, but I wasn't as focused on them as I'd become like into my like late 20s and early 30s. I started to become a little bit more focused and more proactive about being aware about how our government works, right? But the interesting thing about this, and I'm not saying it's funny or it's cool, but it is interesting, that a proclamation went out after President Carter's passing. And this was on December 30th, in a proclamation from current president, Joseph Biden. And it says, like, goes as follows. And I'm reading this from NBC4 New York. "Now, therefore, I, Joseph R. Biden Jr., President of the United States of America, by the authority vested in me by the Constitution and the laws of the United States, in honor and tribute to the memory of President James Earl Carter Jr., and as an expression of public sorrow, do hereby direct that the flag of the United States be displayed at half-staff at the White House and on all public buildings and grounds, at all military posts and naval stations, and on all naval vessels of the federal government in the District of Columbia and throughout the United States and its territories and possessions for a period of 30 days from the day of his death." That's an official proclamation from the President of the United States. That is law now. There is a law on the books about this. Pardon me. And yeah, it's literally like a thing. Like, this is what happens when a president passes away. Flags across the country, particularly at the White House and naval bases, like I said, military installations and public buildings, are flown at half staff for one full month, 30 full days. The reason that this is interesting, is not for the reasons it should be, but it is kind of a very liberal talking point, which is I find both hilarious and also kind of like, is that this means that these flags will be flown at half staff during President Trump's inauguration. And I gotta say, it almost feels kind of fitting that as we bring this orange dope back into office yet again, like we didn't learn our lesson the last time, the flags of this country are being flown at half staff, not just for Jimmy Carter, but also it feels like a little bit for America itself. Oh boy. And wow. What a interesting turn of fate, right? It's almost like somebody mentioned this in another conversation I was having. It's almost like Jimmy was just like, you know what? Screw this guy. I'm going. And then this is what's going to have to happen. And like, I know that that's not what happened, but it is kind of, it's kind of, I don't know if you call it fortuitous, but it is kind of ironic, I guess is the best way to put it, that that is actually happening. And that that's what's going to have to happen on the day of his inauguration. Those flags will have to be flown at half staff by law. Sucks to suck. But yeah, it's funny because as we've seen, I'm not going to dig too much into the politics this time around because it is a new year. There's plenty of other shit to talk about. But the GOP is eating itself alive from the inside out. With Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy basically fucking up things all left, right, and sideways with their new Doge department, the Department of Governmental, I think it's Governmental Excess or something like that. Governmental Efficiency. That's what it is. Department of Governmental Efficiency. They are flexing a little bit of tech bro muscle around, and it's pissing off a lot of not only fiscal conservatives, but just conservatives in general and the MAGA base in particular, because it feels like Elon Musk is basically taking the reins of power and steering Trump in whichever direction he wants them to go. And because people are so stupid that they think Elon's actually a genius and knows some shit and can do some stuff, they're following his lead. And so when he says something, they actually pay more attention to him than Trump, which is causing some division and discord. Not only that, we mentioned the thing about the flag. Another interesting premise is that they're also coming after Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, who is a conservative and basically in the MAGA camp without necessarily proclaiming himself as such. But he's come on the outs with Trump and the MAGA base as well. And they're looking to depose him ahead of the January 6th certification of the election results and the January 20th inauguration. The screwy thing about that is if they depose him before they can certify the results, it could delay Trump actually being able to take power. That's one of that's one of the suppositions that's out there. Now, I don't know how accurate that is. I don't know how likely that is to happen, but TikTok, motherfucker, because it is January 1st. And they are still seemingly no closer to coming to a consensus about what to do about Speaker Johnson and or picking somebody else to be the Senate Majority Leader. So, oh boy, is this going to be something? Yeah. They just can't get it together. And in fact, it's kind of funny. This is actually kind of funny to me because, you know, they were so unified on wanting to just take and disenfranchise and, you know, disrupt and just disturb and aggravate everybody else around them, that now that they've done so much to try to stock up and shore up their positions of power, it's starting to bite them in the ass because you pick somebody like Elon Musk to shoulder up with and to get cozy with, and now you're in his pocket for all the money that he's been putting out, which should be under election interference, where he was campaigning alongside the Republican Party. There were rumors that are as of right now, as far as I know, are unsubstantiated, that he was actually funneling money into certain campaigns and certain constituencies in order to kind of sway voters to vote in Trump's favor. If that actually comes to light, that's a huge problem for Trump, especially as closely as he's ingratiated himself with Elon Musk. But, it's just like anything else, he'll probably end up getting away with it because why not? The Supreme Court's not going to do anything because, you know, they're a lame duck Supreme Court. We also have a horribly crippled Congress right now with no real clear majority being held by either party in the House or the Senate. We're just going to be looking at a bunch of do-nothing shit for the next couple of years, so get ready for that. We're already starting to see some of the impacts economically and politically and socially. People are worried that like their Medicare benefits are going to get taken away. People are worried that their healthcare benefits or SNAP benefits or financial assistance through like state or local or federal agencies is going to be pulled down, pared down, stripped away. And it's kind of the whole "I never thought the leopards would eat my face" kind of thing. And that's become a real big popular saying that's going around. Woman says, "I never thought leopards would eat my face," after she voted for the Leopards Will Eat Your Face party. And they're fucking around and finding out. And on the one hand, I find it unfortunate that our fellow Americans are going to suffer the consequences of the actions of, you know, a certain section of our population. So I do hate that for the people who are actually being affected and who wanted to see a quote unquote more perfect union. And we're like, I don't think that Trump's the guy for us. Now, for the ones who voted for Trump, yeah, I think you kind of get what you get. And you got to own up to that one. Because this is directly your fault. And all the other idiot Republican / MAGA sycophants who've been hanging off of Trump's sack for the last couple of years, and especially throughout this election, you voted for them, that's your fault too. So I just want you to remember that you asked for that. You did that to all of us. You fucked all of us. So I don't feel any sympathy for those people at all, to be quite honest with you. Because it'd be one thing to claim complete ignorance. Like, if you were living in a basement for the last 20 years and they had brought you out and then they were like, here, vote. And you're like, oh, I don't know this guy. Then I can see how maybe, you know, there's not much culpability that we can put towards you. But if you were around, you had the internet, you had the television, found a newspaper, had talked to another human being who had a cell phone or something in the last like 10 years, you should be at least marginally aware. And I'm being very generous by saying that. So I don't have any sympathy for that at all. I will lay this directly at your feet. And if anybody asks me in person, I will say the exact same thing because it's how I actually feel and I believe this. You have helped ruin the lives of hundreds of thousands of Americans, potentially, maybe more. And it's your fault. And if there is a way to actually call you into account for it, like where there's an actual physical penalty that you had to pay for screwing other people over, I'd be all for it. Particularly in this instance, because we know exactly how just how hateful and spiteful and mean these people can be. And still, this is what you wanted? Good. Very nice. Super, super cool. Really happy about that. I'm totally kidding, by the way. I think it sucks ass, but you know, we get what we get. There's lots of craziness going around in the world. Oh man, there's this other story I was thinking about. I was looking at, like, we saw this today, and I hate that I do the podcast on Wednesdays sometimes because it means like the first chunk of the day is pretty much eaten up. But unfortunately, there was some news now about a horrible incident that happened on New Year's Eve in New Orleans, where at least 10 people were killed and 35 more were injured after a driver intentionally rammed into a crowd on Bourbon Street, people who were out there celebrating the New Year or New Year's Eve. Were set upon by whomever this individual is. They've said they've identified a suspect who was a 42-year-old Texas man, an Army vet. They say he was killed in a firefight with officers, had an ISIS flag on him at the time of the attack. The FBI is saying that they don't believe that the driver is solely responsible, but they found weapons, including IEDs or improvised explosive devices, in the vehicle that the gentleman was driving. And also they found other IEDs around the French Quarter, which is that area that everybody talks about, you know, in New Orleans. So yeah, pretty screwy stuff, pretty scary stuff. And I, you know, without seeing more about this, you know, cause it really all just kind of came to light this morning. You really want to know more before you formulate an opinion, but I think that in a bizarre way, we're set to see more of this kind of action. I think people are upset. They're feeling ignored. They're feeling either misrepresented, underrepresented, or not represented at all. They don't feel like they're being listened to, at work or at home, or especially by, you know, people in the seats of power, and they're just going to start lashing out. It's unfortunate because innocent people are going to get caught in the fray. But I think we're going to end up seeing more of this stuff. And I hate to say that, but I do actually believe that that's going to happen because people are very reactionary by nature. So I'm praying that it doesn't, but I'm also very nervous that it actually will be the case. People are losing their fucking minds. And that's not just here in America. That's happening around the world. But I think the more people start to become disillusioned with society and with government and with their economic status, their economic situation, we're going to see more of this kind of horrible thing. And it just actually brought to light something that I had missed in the news, but it popped up just recently. Is a woman from Avignon, France, a woman who goes by the name of Giselle Pellicot, I believe that's how you say it, has sued her husband. And her story is heart-wrenching, and it's nauseating at the same time. Apparently, over the course of a decade, her, at the time, husband had drugged her into unconsciousness and basically sold her to be used as a sex slave for up to and maybe more than 50-something men. And a bunch of them actually ended up getting corralled and caught up, and they're going to trial. Her husband, or former husband, Dominique Pellicot, could spend the rest of his natural life in prison. He's age 72 at the time of this writing that they have here on NPR.org. But this woman suffered just horrible, horrible torture at the hands of this absolute fucking animal. And it turns out, like, I mean, there's a lot to go into this story. I don't have time to read the entire thing to you in one podcast. But the fact that she's going to get some justice, is there's some hope here. But oh my God, this poor woman, she has to be just so traumatized. Apparently, there were some things that, like, she would, you know, there were some certain triggers that were kind of cluing her into this stuff. And then, like, some of the kids, I think their children were starting to figure out, like, hey, what the fuck is dad doing to mom? And eventually it kind of all came, broke loose, and she found out and then decided, nah, motherfucker, you're going to prison, and so are all of them. And good for her. And I hope that these guys rot in jail. This is the kind of thing where, like, people get really, you know, they get very conservative when it comes to their views on the death penalty when somebody is accused of, you know, rape, sexual assault, and especially something this egregious where it's actually, like, you know, sex slavery. Whether just because she wasn't conscious for it doesn't mean that she wasn't actually a sex slave. You know what I mean? It's no different than if you put somebody in a cage and then just let them out for that purpose, to actually have this woman in your home and just drug her to unconsciousness and then let other people use her like that is odious and heinous of the highest order. And, you know, I'm going to go into some, what point do we forgive people kind of thing. I don't think you don't get to be forgiven for something this heinous. This is bordering on brutality. There's actually a statute built into, I think it's the Geneva Convention. There's a brutality statute where some of this stuff can actually be constituted as, like, if it's happening during wartime, there's certain things you do, it's under a war crime statute. And one could say that this is actually, in a way, an act of domestic terrorism. That's being thrown around a lot here in the United States. But, I mean, what's more terrifying than your significant other drugging you until you're unconscious and then letting other people molest you while you're asleep? That's, I mean, yeah, look, at a certain point, I feel like death is too good for some people, you know? That would be the kind of thing that my tax dollars can absolutely go to, keeping him in prison and miserable for the rest of his life. I know that's not very Christian of me, and I hate to say that, but it does feel that way on the surface. Like, you know, fuck that guy and everything he stands for and everything about him. And I hope he rots in there. And I do. And all the rest of them too, because they all played a part in it. And, you know, it's funny to have that idea go through your head, but at the same time be like, but there are some people who deserve to be absolved, or at the very least, not even absolved, but to be forgiven. Like I said, we were talking about Jimmy Carter. I'm sure there were things that happened during his administration that people were not super thrilled about. We're going to be swinging over a little bit into the gridiron gripes, actually, as we go up to that section of today's podcast. Recently, Michael Vick had gotten a new coaching job. Now, some of you may remember Michael Vick was embroiled in quite a bit of controversy early on in his career when he was found guilty of animal cruelty and illegal dogfighting rings, which is absolutely terrible. It's a horrible fucking thing to do for anybody, no matter who you are, whether you're, you know, a multi-million dollar, you know, football player, or you're just Joe Schmo that lives down the street and owns a bunch of pit bulls. So for the longest time, he's been an analyst on Fox NFL Sunday. But as some of you may remember, he was formerly a player on the Atlanta Falcons and the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles actually picked him up after the dogfighting scandal and brought him on to, you know, play for them. They took a chance on him when everybody else was basically treating him as radioactive, which, again, my wife and I were talking about this. Got to give respect to the Eagles organization for nothing else. Give them that they took a chance on the man who made a huge mistake, you know, committed crimes, and then dedicated himself to getting better, but was all the while still made out to be a pariah. And to this day, is sometimes still treated as such. But him being willing to step down from the NFL Sunday analyst job and taking this job as the head coach at Norfolk State University is pretty cool. And people were kind of surprised by it, but I think that he'd spent so much time in the spotlight that he wants to still be able to be involved in the world of football and somewhere adjacent to the game. Without maybe having as much of a spotlight shown on him and so much made of, you know, his past. And, you know, the outflowing of support from former teammates and coaches for Michael Vick was actually really cool to see. But I saw so many people who were ready to condemn this man to death again. And it's like, how much does one person have to suffer for their crimes? I'm not saying that, you know, in the eyes of God, sin is sin, that and the other. You know, I know that from, you know, growing up reading the Bible. I also think that there's some layers to this shit. Michael Vick was convicted, went to prison, did community service, worked towards rehabilitating not just his personal, you know, image for the public, but also his own private perception of self. And, you know, by being an advocate for, you know, working against animal cruelty and turning his life around, actually becoming a better human being. And people still want to shit on this dude for that. And to those people, I say, I hope that you're completely perfect and nothing you've ever done has ever been perceived in any way, shape, or form as negative or sinful or illegal or whatever. The whole he who is without sin cast the first stone, right? Also, people who live in glass houses shouldn't be throwing shit. And I feel like that about Michael Vick. And it's really interesting to me to listen to who says what and where they come from when they say that kind of stuff. And I feel like especially younger generations may not really understand this, but because you're able to have such immediate and quick access to stuff, you don't have time to really sit back and you have time if you make it. But the way media and social media in particular and information as a whole is driven towards people at such a high rate of speed, you sometimes don't have the time to sit down and actually sit with your thoughts on an issue and learn about how you actually feel about something. And I think that that's kind of it's kind of what the backlash that I've been seeing about Michael Vick has become is people are just like, I remember he did this. Bad, 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 bad. And it's like, dude, if nobody is able to ever get forgiveness, then what the fuck do we have a legal system for? Why is forgiveness even a concept? If you're always going to be remembered only at your very best or only at your very worst, why should anybody try ever at all? You know? And there's a lot of people who are, I mean, no one gets out of this life clean, let's just be honest. But there's a lot of people that are barking a real, real loud, you know, real, real loud tone when it's like, you ain't perfect. You know what I mean? Not one of us is. And this is a man who's actively trying to redeem himself and has worked hard for the second chance that he's had. Now, if he was running an illegal fighting ring today, oh, absolutely, he doesn't deserve that. You know what I mean? You didn't learn your lesson last time around? Then yeah, I could see you being mad at this dude. This is somebody who's actively worked towards turning not only, like I said, not only his life around, but also his perception and who he is as a person, becoming a better human being. And we're not going to give him a chance? Nah, I'm not for that. I'm not for that at all. Because if somebody were to see me at my absolute worst and then be like, that's all you'll ever be, I'm like, well, I'm never going to be anything to you. So fuck you. And I can do whatever I want to you now. It doesn't inspire you to be to continue to be a better person or to even make any attempt at change. You know, and I think that by damning someone for so much for so long for something they've paid their debt to society for, which is the thing that we like to pat ourselves on the back about as Americans, you know, our legal system, if you go in there and you pay your dues, you pay your debt to society, you come out and, you know, all's right with the world. That's not necessarily true. Look at Michael Vick. He could tell you that shit firsthand. After he did all the stuff he did and then, you know, went through all the penance that he had to pay, people were still dogging this dude and to this day. To this day, he'll never be able to dodge that specter, which is fucked up because he's done so much more that's good than he ever did that was bad, but nobody gonna look at that, you know? When I was a kid, you know, they had the Scholastic Book Fair, right? One of my favorite things was going to that book fair, trying to find like a new Choose Your Own Adventure book or some, one of the things we talked about the other day was some dinosaur erasers, like little erasers that were shaped like your favorite dinosaurs. Getting cool pencils with football teams on them or, you know, cartoon characters and stuff. And then, you know, sometimes you get like a poster or two. And I had this one poster forever and a day old. My mom will probably remember this if she hears this. I had this one poster that I got. And I think I got it like sneakily as a reminder of just how shit sometimes it feels to be like the oldest or, you know, dealing with the stuff that you deal with in your family situations and whatnot. Like, you know, my father was kind of a mean bastard a lot of the time. And so I found this picture of a little kitten in a pot of spaghetti. And he's got like just spaghetti noodles draped all over him because he climbed into the pot, you know, it's spilled it all over the place. And it says, when I do right, no one ever remembers. But when I do wrong, no one ever forgets. And I think I remember that poster from when I was a little child. And I think I got that thing. And it was always a reminder, like, you know, it felt like that way sometimes, especially in regards to my relationship with him. My father was, you know, no matter what I do, no matter how good I am, no matter how well I've performed, no matter all the other good things I do, only thing you ever focus on is how bad I am. When I messed up, when I made a mistake, when I told a lie, when I stole something, when I cheated on a test or whatever. All you ever remember is the negative. So what's the fucking point of trying with you, you know? And that mentality didn't serve me very well, especially after I left home and got out to be an adult in the world. I had to readjust that line of thinking. And I think that's the way we got to look at this too. You know what I mean? Like, did I murder a bunch of people by driving a car through a busy street and then shooting out the window? I didn't do that. Did I drug a partner and let the neighbors and coworkers come in and use their body for sex? I didn't do that. I cheated on a test. I stole a couple of titty mags when I was a kid. You know what I mean? In his eyes, those were exactly the same. And it was like I could never get beyond that specter of those small little teen, they're stupid kid shit. I could never seem to get past that. And so, you know, I had also come to realization too as I got older that not everybody's going to treat you like that. And the people who are, what the fuck do they matter, right? They're usually overcompensating for some guilt that they have on their own. It's like that whole saying, like, methinks thou doth protest too much. Like, you talking a lot aloud for somebody that is not a perfect human being. And then as you come to find out more about him, you're like, oh, you're not perfect. You really on that bullshit? Like, nah, I don't really give a fuck about that either. And like I said, I'm not perfect either. So I know when I get my comeuppance on stuff, I'm like, yo, that I had that coming. You know what I mean? That was all me right there, baby. I earned that. But yeah, sometimes you look at people and you're like, you know what? You're running a lot of mouth without a lot of, you know, backbone to back it up. That gets real old real fast. People get sick of your shit real quick. So I just wanted to throw that out there so people can be aware like that happened, you know, and we need to leave Michael Vick the fuck alone. Wish that man the best. Yeah, I'm hoping that actually works out for him really well. And I'm excited for him, you know what I mean? Like he really can become, his story can be illustrative of how forgiveness can work. And how things can change and why they should, you know what I mean? Like it should absolutely be different for him. There's one other thing that I was trying to remember. I know we had it in one of my Discord channel threads. I'm trying to remember if I got it right. It's been a couple of days since I last saw it. But there was a post in our Discord. I'm going to be scrolling forever if I try to find it anyway. essentially what the post was about a new phone app that's been created that actually helps help migrant workers or illegal immigrants. Let me get this right, because I'm going to mess this up if I don't. So give me 1 second. I'll be right back through the magic of editing and the pause button. Ta-da! I'm back. All right, so yeah, this is coming from Axios.com. This says in Mexico, the country of Mexico, is launching a smartphone app that allows Mexican migrants to warn relatives and instantly alert the nearest U.S. consulate, if the U.S. immigration agencies detain them. This was announced on, let's see if I get this timing on this one, this past Friday. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty dope. It's fucked up that it needs to happen, but it's actually pretty cool where they can be like, hey, they're coming to get me. So this app is supposed to go live this month, actually. It says, Foreign Secretary Juan Ramon de la Fuente said at a press conference that the emergency notification app will go live in January. I have personally attended several open meetings where the key message is to tell our fellow citizens that they are not alone and will not be alone. It's a pretty cool little app to let you know that, hey, man, some shit's going down. I need some help. And this way you can't necessarily be like railroaded without somebody knowing what happened to you, particularly given a lot of the blowback that's been coming through the MAGA morons. Immigration's great when it's, H-1Bs for somebody like Donald Trump, who can hire a bunch of cheap labor to work at his golf courses or at his fucking, porn palace in Mar-a-Lago, Or if you need to get a couple of cheap workers to, crunch code or something like that, yeah, sure, it's fine. But, but if it's just people coming over here trying to work and, provide a decent living for themselves, when you can abuse them, it's okay. But as soon as they've outlived their usefulness, we gotta go round them up and get them out of here. Or if it's politically expedient for you, then it's fine to, to terrorize them, to tear apart their families, to uproot them from the communities that they've come to live in and work in and pay taxes in. Because whether you realize this or not, a lot of people say this stupidly, they come over here and they take stuff and they don't pay no taxes. Bitch, how you think they buy food? How they buy gas? How they buy clothes? They got to pay a sales tax somewhere. Every state has at least some kind of sales tax attached to it. Now, it might not be a federal income tax or whatever. There might not be a state income tax levied against them, but they pay some taxes somewhere. If you got property, you got a vehicle, you paying a car note, you got taxes on your fucking registration. You got to pay for a license so you can drive around. Even if you drive illegally, you still got to buy gas. There's a tax on that. Tax on food. They're paying taxes somehow, some way. So it's not that they don't pay no taxes. You know what I mean? But what really happens is, let's say you decide you're going to get rid of all of them. Are we going to get rid of everybody who's just this under this shade of manila envelope color? You get rid of them all. Watch this country grind to a fucking halt. I want to say it was, you've heard of very many variations on the theme. You know what I mean? If there's no X kind of migrant, then this would disappear. It was the Honorable Ralphie May, rest in peace. Who had a stand-up bit where he was talking about a lady who was yelling about, we got to get rid of Mexicans. And he was like, okay, man, well, who do you suggest we get back into the fields to pick produce? And he's like, well, you get rid of all the Mexicans and you had to hire white people to go in them fields, your salary is going to cost you $97. And he's not wrong, because you have to pay those workers a commensurate wage. You can't abuse them like you do, an illegal immigrant. You have to pay an American worker a living wage. And so at a certain point, yeah, all that stuff's going to go up, because they're not going to do this out of the goodness of their heart. Again, same thing as with the tariffs. That cost gets passed on somewhere down the line to the consumer, and eventually everybody pays a price. So you can either leave these illegal migrants alone and continue to abuse their labor and not pay them and not offer them, health benefits or insurance or, health benefits, insurance, or any reasonable wages, retirement plans, anything like that. Or you can get rid of them all and then get ready to start paying, Johnny come lately to come and walk through your fields, picking out, fruits and vegetables and shit like that for $16.75 an hour. And then the next time you go to Chipotle with just you and your girlfriend, the dinner date's going to cost you $250. What do you want? I mean, it would be nice to live in a world where corporate greed didn't extend so far that it had to reach all the way into your pocket and through your life so that, you know, Elon Musk can continue to buy yachts and have innumerable amounts of kids, or so Jeff Bezos can fly to space again. But unfortunately, that's not the world that we live in, and that's not the way that our economy works. So I don't know what to tell you about that. Maybe we should not be doing this, some of the shit that we're doing. I don't know. It's a thought. Let's just put it that way. It's a thought. There's a lot of stuff going on, man. There's a lot of stuff going on. I just had like a lot of rambling and shit going on. Let's do the gridiron gripe so we can kind of put a bow on this bad boy. Let's see. Going through the last week, week 17, pretty underwhelming performances. The Chiefs beat the Steelers. Okay, so and. Kind of figured the Chiefs were going to stomp on somebody. Just unfortunately happened to be the Pittsburgh Steelers. 29-10. That was a game that was going down on Wednesday, the 25th, Christmas Day. And then, of course, you know, just because we're talking about Christmas games, the Ravens take out the Texans 31-2, which is a sound shellacking. The following day, however, the Bears meet the Seahawks. And it just turns into a comedy of fucking errors. It was absolutely a shit show. And the Bears did actually get robbed from what was going to be a turnover and would have been a touchdown, which would have put the Bears up. If that had stayed, it would have put them up by an additional 7 points, which means this game would have been 6-10 for Chicago. But the refs, who couldn't see what was at first a fumble, was ruled a fumble. And then the they were like, oh, no, it's not a fumble. The runner was down by contact. And then the ball came loose. And then they're like, well, okay, it was a fumble. And the ball came loose. But the guy who was picking up the ball was also down by contact, even though he was on his feet, didn't go to his knees, didn't hit the ground or nothing like that, because the runner he was taking the ball from was tackled and that guy touched him. So now they just ate that whole touchdown. So definitely shit officiating. Like, I know Chicago doesn't deserve to win, but that was actually legit. They should have been able to get that touchdown. So whoever the refs were on that game, just when Seattle makes out those checks, make sure they make them out to cash next time so it can't be traced. Because that was some bullshit right there. They definitely got robbed that time around. And then, of course, you have the Jacksonville Jaguars finally scoring a win against the witless Tennessee Titans. And 20-13, another one. They didn't actually deserve to win that game, but they got lucky. You know, a broken watch is right twice a day. And I think Jacksonville was just kind of due just by the law of averages. Like, eventually they were going to win one. And it just, again, they just happened to catch the Titans slipping. But not really much to report coming up in this next week of football. On Saturday, the Steelers are going to be playing the Bengals, which is like, yeah, okay, whatever. And then Sunday, the Jaguars are facing off against the Colts, and the Bears are facing the Packers, which it feels like the Bears and the Packers, the last couple of years, they play each other two or three times for no fucking reason. Like, there's not any other teams in the NFL. They just want to watch everybody swirl around the bottom of the drain on the way down. And I don't get it. Doesn't make any sense. Either way, I won't be seeing the Bears game, but I will probably see the Jaguars game. I'll report back on that next week. As we're wrapping up this final week of the regular season, week 18, and then going into the postseason, looks like there's a bunch of slots that are still, I mean, everything's still to be determined, but we'll see how it shakes out, and I'll come back to you with some more gridiron gripes next time around. Man, I'll tell you, I said there's some weird stuff going on around the world, man. Weird stuff. I was having these weird dreams lately. I had this dream a while back, about a week ago, not too long after the last podcast, where I was trying to rescue some kittens from like an abandoned house or something like that. And every time I try to pick up these kittens, like their claws would turn into these fucking little sharp bone-like hooks, and they would just dig into my hand. I'm like, what the hell? Like, these little kittens were just tearing me apart. I'm like, you know, I was like, fuck them. Let them stay here. They clearly don't want to be rescued. Let's leave them here. They're fine. Leave them alone. But it was disturbing to me because I love cats and kittens. I mean, there's very little that's cuter than a kitten, right? But yeah, I was like super upset at the end of that dream because I was like, in my brain, I could feel, I mean, I'm feeling the pain going through my hands. I'm like, fuck, these cats are just ripping me to shreds. So I wasn't thrilled about that. And then, like, not on the heels of that, I fell asleep and I had this dream that I don't know where I was or how it was coming around. something about hospital and a baby, but I know that there's a baby, they called the baby Sati. And it was horrifying. It was horrifying. There's actually an anime called, I'm going to mess this up. I want to say Dororo is what it's called. Dororo. It's essentially the premise is this samurai lord wants to wield power over his fiefdom. So instead of doing the work and helping the people and, you know, building a military, working on the agriculture, he sells off his would-be infant son's limbs, feet, eyes, tongue, his ability to hear, all this shit. So when the baby's born, it basically is just like this peeled husk of a torso with a head. No eyes, no tongue, no arms, legs, no skin. This horrifying little mutant baby comes out. And they're just like, what the actual fuck is with this? So that's how it starts. And it's kind of how this dream started. Like the same thing happened. This baby was just like horribly disfigured. It looked like somebody had tried to peel it with a potato peeler. And I woke up almost in tears because I was so freaked out about what this dream was about. Like I'd never seen anything like that in my dreams before. And I've seen some horrific shit that never sparked that. But here's where it gets weirder. As the baby started to quote unquote heal, it would shrink. So like they were doing like all these procedures in the hospital, try to help it. And I'm trying to like, you know, nurse it back to health. Like I'm feeding it and all this other stuff. And the skin would regrow and like the arms and legs would start to grow back out. But every time it would start to get better, it would shrink. It would get smaller to the point where like when it was finally fully formed, it actually changed into this weird little like gnoll or troll or something like that. And it was about the size of my palm. And it had these sharp little claws. Again, with the sharp claws thing. I don't know what the fuck that was all about. But I would try to hold the baby and it would just be stabbing me with its claws every time I went to pick it up. It would just stab me with its fingers and toes grew like little nails, like literally like actual like wood driving nails. And they were just sticking me every time I picked it up. I'm like, I don't like what's happening right now. I don't even remember, like nothing, like I said, I don't watch a lot of horror movies or anything like that. I rarely ever will turn anything like that on. I don't watch a lot of supernatural or demonic stuff. Like that one cartoon I mentioned was kind of like an outlier. And I was like, I don't know where that came from, but that was weird. So I don't ingest a lot of that kind of stuff into my subconscious. So the fact that it just manifested itself in this weird way was pretty upsetting. I didn't know what to do with it. Both of those dreams fucked me up. I was like, maybe I'll just stay awake. I probably just need to stay up. It was bothersome. Ugh. You know what else was bothersome? Oh my gosh, we're going to talk about this too because it's going to happen during the stream at some point today. I have to make the apology tour. Xbox, man. Xbox is fucking up. So some of you might remember that I mentioned I was trying to buy prizes for my subscriber winners for November. And the Microsoft store, you know, was not allowing me to buy digital codes online. At one point, it said that I did buy one, but I never got charged for it from what I can tell. I have to go back and check, but if I have gotten charged for this thing, I have to be like, I tried to do this, it never worked, and it's just sat in the queue. So I'm going to go check through my credit card statements because I'm pretty sure it's on one card that I'm like, I never did that. That never happened. I never got that thing. But anyway, I was trying to buy those cards. They weren't going through. The process was flawed. It kept telling me there's some weird error that was like, oh, that means your credit card's declined or the information's incorrect. I'm like, no, it's a brand new card. It's been updated. There's a balance that's available on there, which would definitely more than cover what I'm trying to purchase. I don't know what the fuck is happening. So I was like, I'm just going to go buy the cards for the prizes at a physical location. I will scratch off the little sticker thingy and I'll give that person the code so they will have access to the funds. Well, shit. Turns out I go and send it off to one of the winners and they write back and they're like, hey man, I got that card. Thanks for the dollar. And I'm like, fuck you mean? That was 10 bucks. I got the receipt right here. Like, bro, I spent 10 bucks on this thing. It should be $10. And then I was like, let me see if I can figure it out. Things gone by through the holidays. And then I get a message back the other day. It's like, yeah, I went to go try that thing again. It says it's $0. I'm like, nope. Nope, we're going to fix this. So I called Xbox after. Okay, here's the thing. You can't just call Xbox or Microsoft like you used to be able to do. Like, I mean, even just as far back as 10 years ago, you used to be able to get an actual human being on the phone by pushing buttons on a phone, and you would call an office where there were a bunch of people there who who are there to actually answer your questions and help walk you through certain steps. Again, whether or not your game was working, if a download code wouldn't work, maybe you're having some trouble connecting to the internet, whatever, whatever, right? Not anymore. Not anymore. Now, if you find a number for Xbox or Microsoft, you can call that number. And you get the runaround from everything. The first one I tried to call was actually Microsoft. And then they were like, well, you have an Xbox question. So if you want to talk to Xbox, you got to go to the website and do this, that, and the other. And then you could talk to them. I'm like, well, why couldn't you just direct me to a person over there? Because I know you have them. I've talked to them before. And even though it takes forever to get a hold of one of them and you got to go through all these online hoops, if I'm already on the phone with you, just transfer me to them. You know what I mean? What's the fucking problem? So after trying to fight through their stupid online help services, I'm using air quotes for that, I finally do manage to get to the part of the internet, which is very, very incredibly well hidden, by the way, where you can request a call. And after you maneuver around all the ways that they try to not get you to talk to somebody, and I requested a call, I got a call almost immediately, which was great. But the person couldn't understand me at all. And that is not to say that, you know, they didn't speak English. They spoke English fairly well enough because I could understand them, but they were not understanding me. And this is one of the things I said to my wife. It's going to make me sound like a racist, but it's not what I'm trying to get at. I don't care where you're from on the planet, what languages you do or don't speak. This is clearly not this person's first language, English, but they spoke it well enough that I knew what they were saying. But for some reason, the comprehension level was not there so that they could adequately deal with the customer. And that's where I have a problem. It's not that you don't speak English perfectly well. So the fuck what? I don't speak Spanish perfectly well, and I'm half Mexican. So I'm not going to judge you on that. What I am going to be upset about is not necessarily with the person, but with the company as a whole. They've outsourced the jobs that they would be able to use, or that would be more, let's put it this way, more adequately served by Native American English speakers who could actively understand and comprehend the language, the idioms, the, you know, the colloquialisms of an American English speaker more readily than someone for whom English is not their first language. And I think that that puts them at a disadvantage to be able to help the customer, puts the customer at a disadvantage to have satisfaction with the product. And ultimately what will happen is it'll put the company at a disadvantage because now you have disgruntled customers and workers who are feeling like they're not being heard, they're not being respected, and they can't be effective at their jobs. So you got discord sown all the way around. And it was really aggravating. So after trying to get through four or five times through the dumbass phone line, I finally got this one guy who was actually kind of funny. He's like, my name is John Love, here to spread peace and love. And he had like a slight, accent I couldn't quite place. But he was very effective. So John Love, you're probably not going to hear this, but if you do and you work over there at Microsoft Xbox, baby, I got you. I'll give you one of these broke-ass gift cards on me. But he did actually go through the hoops and getting me squared away. So if you hear this, and I haven't got a hold of you yet, to my two winners that were waiting on those gift cards, according to legend, they should both actually work. There's just something weird bug in the system, flying ointment or whatever, that's causing one to read differently. But if you actually go ahead and actively redeem it, you should get the full amount. So I'm going to make sure I relay that to them in person later on. But yeah, that's where we're standing right now. Those cards should work just fine. But Microsoft is fucking up because the fact that I had to fight with their computer system so much that I decided I'm going to go to a physical location, buy the cards, then come back, then scratch them off, email the other people, then wait to see if it worked. That's a little bit much, man. That's a little stupid. And it shouldn't be that way. But because they've managed to essentially like cordon themselves off from their actual, you know, player base and customers, they're screwing themselves up, man. It's going to get to the point where people are going to be like, you know what? I don't want to deal with them anymore. And I hated the fact that like I couldn't just call directly and talk to a person. It used to be a thing. You used to be able to call Xbox and they'd be like, hey, you know, this is Valerie. And I heard that you're having a problem with this. And like, yeah, I'm doing this. And like, okay, well, here's what you're going to do. All right. This, that, and the other. Oh, by the way, you said you're calling from where? Oh, the weather's cool out there. Huh? Well, I'm over here, and it's been raining all day long, man. Like, but I hope things are going well. And they could actually, you know, communicate with you, and they loved what they did. You could hear it in their voices. These poor folks are reading off a fucking script because they have no idea what Xbox is. And if you've never seen it, there's a show that's out there in the world called Outsourced. I would recommend that you give it a look and see. And it's kind of, it's very telling because it does poke at this whole idea of customer service being literally outsourced to places like India, you know, like Southeast Asia and Africa and other countries and other locations where the economy may not be as, you know, it may not be as thriving as some other places, but these are, again, jobs you can get done by people who speak English just well enough to complete the task, but without having the full capacity of understanding the nuances of, you know, American English. And it does a really good job of illustrating that point. So hopefully if you get a chance, check out Outsourced. I don't know exactly where to find it. I would tell you where to link it, but you guys got internet and cell phones. You can figure this out. I trust you. You're smart. So yeah, give that a peek. Yeah, and now that we've talked a little bit about that, I'm going to close this off with a little bit of a dig at Destiny, which is always funny. Destiny 2 continuing to lose subscribers over the holidays. Well, not subscribers, you losing players. Down, I believe, at last count, it was 35% player loss from November into December. Now we're in January, so I'd have to check the numbers again. This is at the time I wrote this, too, like 35% player drop-off. Turns out when you don't support the servers, you don't do anything to really involve or invest your players in your game, and instead you run off for greener pastures with Sony and Marathon, which I guarantee you is going to fail miserably, people get pissed, and then they walk away from the game. Sucks to suck. So yeah, I'm actually, again, I feel bad for the developers, the people who worked hard to make the game look great and whatnot, but the people who are supposed to be making the decisions that would keep Destiny an active, viable game, essentially the people at the top of the corporate structure, they're just screwing it into the ground because they're on their way out looking for another thing to make them more money. So their CEO can buy more cars and brag about them to the people who are, you know, working for the scraps that they're willing to toss their way. Very neat, very cool, very Bungie, very Bungie. Also, the server issues over the holidays were a trip too, which is funny as fuck for a game that, like I said, a game company that's been making games for over 30 years, at least 20 of which they were making online first-person shooters, which is very much what they're doing right now. The fact that they can't get their servers to work on a regular, consistent basis is hilariously stupid. But that's also the reason why Marathon's going to fail. And as much as I hate it for the creative talent that worked on it, I hope it does fail so that Bungie can learn their lesson and somebody will hopefully come in and buy them out. Microsoft. Oh, I'm sorry. Something in my throat there. And clean out their C-suite, change it around, and install some people who actually love and understand games and game design, and build it back up to a decent company again, because it's been dog shit for a long time. And it deserves the reputation it has because they've worked very hard to get it. It deserves everything it's getting. I hate it for, again, like I said, there's a lot of wonderful creative people out there in the gaming universe who get caught up in companies that just don't give a fuck about the games, and they're just there to fucking please shareholders and make profit. That's it. That's the only reason those guys are there. To those people who work in those positions, I want you to know that I completely do empathize with you. I can't say I sympathize because I've never had an opportunity to work in the gaming industry, but I know what it's like to work for a boss who doesn't give a fuck about you and just only is trying to make profit. I used to work for one as a manager who was a manager of mine when I worked at the Stop of Games. And that hose beast didn't give a fuck about anybody else. All that she cared about was making sure that she got her perks, she got her bonus, and fuck everybody else. And I hated her. I hated that job because of her. And I hated GameStop as a whole, as a company, because of how they incentivized management and, you know, team leads and whatnot to essentially abuse the worker bees and give them fuck all. These are people who love games, who love gaming, and love the gaming community and want to be able to do something adjacent to a job that they would probably adore. There might be somebody there who could be a future concept artist or voice actor or motion capture performer or a game music composer. And they're like, you know, at the very least, I want to get my foot at least a little bit closer to gaming. I'll work at this game store. This sounds like a cool place to be. And then they got their hopes and dreams shit on. Fuck GameStop. They're currently also now closing more locations. A friend of mine who's worked at GameStop for over a decade or so is losing her job there. And I think she's actually moving out mostly willingly, but also kind of like reluctantly. But I've been telling people for years, ever since my experience with GameStop as an employee, fuck them. Fuck them. I think I've been in a GameStop over the last 3 years, a total of, I mean, I can count on one hand the times I've been in a GameStop. And it was only because I had to, because I had a product that was warrantied through them for the most part. I would, otherwise I'd never go to GameStop. If it was on fire, I wouldn't spit on it. Let's just put it that way. Fuck GameStop. Absolutely. And then we're going to talk about something actually pretty cool, because I've been excited about it for the last couple of weeks, and that is Marvel Rivals. Yes, it has captured my imagination. I've created my own little gamer group there. A bunch of my friends from my Discord are joined up, and we're having a good time in Marvel Rivals. Now, I'll be honest, the game is not perfect, like nothing is. There's still some balancing issues that definitely need to get worked out. And then there's also, you know, again, there's like some minor, just minor things as far as terms of design. Like, it's a, for those of you who aren't aware, it's a third-person hero shooter, so as it's called, where you're playing as Marvel superheroes and villains from across a multiverse, as Marvel is very fond of as of late. You may be aware if you've watched the film franchises. And there's an overall arcing story. There's character backgrounds and bios. There's interactions with the characters. I've discussed some of this on previous podcasts. But one thing I wanted to say is I actually, I'm really starting to enjoy that there's a shift from this get good mentality and more of a focus on game design. And I want to say that NetEase, again, while they're not perfect, they've done a pretty solid job at shifting from the typical formula of a first-person shooter where it's this button do this button do that button do this, go. And every character that you could play is pretty much a cut and paste of the other characters in terms of how they play stylistically. You know what I mean? Like, you look different. You might sound different. Maybe you have a grenade launcher instead of a machine gun or whatever, fuck. But, you know, basically you push this button, it do that, then go burp, then go dead. This one, Marvel Rivals, is a little different. Every character seems to have like a certain ability set. And not every button that you have on your controller is necessarily mapped out to function the same way across each character. And when they say a character plays differently, sometimes what they're saying is, based on the loadout that they have or the skill set at their disposal, you're going to adjust the way that you maybe approach a certain situation. When Marvel Rivals says that every character plays differently, there are literally times when like you could push the same button amongst three or four different characters and it will do something completely different. Sometimes it will cause you to do like a double jump or something. Maybe it'll cause you to use a sprint ability. Maybe it'll cause you to throw a smoke grenade. Maybe it'll cause you to set up little traps around the area. So that same button could have like 6 or 10 different functionalities depending on who you're playing as. And I think that that takes away the ability that, you know, you could just get good at the game as a whole and you can win with anybody. Overwatch kind of suffered from that a little bit to a certain degree, where certain action types were mapped to a certain button schematic, and then that would be it. You know, no matter what button you pressed, you would do X thing that was the same as this one, same as this one, same as this one. There was very little variation in how a character's abilities were mapped out. You know, damage here, jump here, heal there, support here, that thing. I think that's one of the reasons that Marvel Rivals is so interesting, is because no matter which character you choose, you can always find a little bit of a variation in the gameplay. Like, some of the abilities might look a little similar. Some of them might be wildly different, but they definitely don't play exactly the same. So it requires you to be a little bit more adroit and to also focus a lot more on, you know, which character you're playing and what their abilities are and learn how to use them in concert with your team and everything. So I'm really excited. I think that while, you know, the game is not, it's not perfect, and then definitely there are some issues with spawn points being in really weird, stupid places. Some maps are unevenly balanced against players with X type of mobility or Y type of mobility. The overall pacing of the characters themselves is generally pretty slow. And then there are some characters who are lightning fast for no fucking reason at all. Jeff the Landshark. But yeah, overall, I think this has been a solid game. And for me personally, other games that I played this year that were new to me, I'm not going to say they're new necessarily to everybody, but of the ones that are new to me, Marvel Rivals is definitely in like my top five for 2024. If anything, I'd probably say it's actually closer to the top three, just because it's a fun concept built in a familiar universe with some new characters and some twists on some classics, in a genre that you don't generally see them being represented in. So super excited about where the future is for what the future is for Marvel Rivals. I hope you guys are as well. If you have a pick for like the top three games of the year, let me know what you think those are. I'll read yours off by hitting me up over at patreon.com/wanderingonestudios. Yeah, tell me about your thoughts on what your games of the year were, what maybe your thoughts were on some of the commentary I put out today. I'd love to hear and read that. Or if you've got something completely on your own, some unique situation that you're like, hey man, I could use an outside perspective, but I'd also want to sample the audience. Go ahead and throw that down too. We can maybe make a thread where it'd be like, hey man, I think this, I said that, you know, report back to me. Let me know what you think, if this advice helped or whatever. Maybe somebody else can chime in with some perspective that I'm not aware of and you're not aware of, and we can help one another. Or we can at least maybe get a laugh out of it, you know, nothing else. We can all like laugh at ourselves, laugh at one another, and maybe spread a little bit of joy around this 2025. How about that? And with that thought, I'm going to get out of here. I'm well overdue for my stream. And a reminder, like I will be posting up updates to when the streams will go on break. That will take probably about 2 weeks to a month. Kind of take a breather, you know, stretch my legs a little bit, do a little bit more artwork and get a little bit of a refresher on the stream's look and feel overall. So we'll see how we shake that all out in the next week or so. That information should go up online. So if you're able to go over to twitch.tv/linkib, you'll know more about it by checking the schedule tab. And I'm going to get out of here. Thank you guys again for coming in. Thank you for continuing to share the podcast with friends and family, coworkers, enemies alike. And yeah, happy 2025. We made it. Let's do our best to make it a great year. Let's see if we can get this podcast up to 100 subscribers by the end of this year. That'd be amazing. You guys are awesome. I'm LinkIB, Link Flores. And I will see y'all a little further down the road. Peace and be well, everyone.